This week on the show, we review X-Men Apocalypse. Does this movie improve on its previous installment? Well, we're going to tell you. Also, Netflix has the exclusive on all streaming Disney properties come September. A classic horror movie franchise gets a reboot, yet finds a familiar producer. Dwayne The Rock Johnson will get his very own spinoff from the Fast and the Furious movies. And Preacher preaches his first episode on AMC. All that and more coming up right now.
Welcome, welcome, welcome one and all. Anyone listening, you have just tuned in to Just Talking, a podcast where me and a colleague express our opinions on any and all things entertainment, whether it be movies, television, video games, books, comic books, toys, music, anything that comes to mind and is relevant at the time, we're going to tell you about it. Featuring myself, Christopher Shue, alongside, as always, my co-host, Kenneth Eaton. So guys, I'm ready. I hope you're ready. So without further ado, let's start the show.
All right, hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode. This is episode 8 of the podcast. If you're with us, thank you so much for being with us. We love that you're here joining us. We're back now in full force. Got two speakers working this time instead of the one, which we are happy about. And hopefully we sound a little clearer, a little better. Let's see how you sound over there. How you doing over there, Ken?
Doing pretty good.
Sounds good. How's everything been for you this week?
I've been pretty okay. A lot of things. Just kind of a slow week, but I finished off a trilogy this week that I'm pretty excited to talk about later at the close of the podcast. But
oh, yeah. Go ahead.
But it refers to like when you're a movie fan and you come across somebody that maybe hadn't watched many movies, and let's say like you come up to somebody and you say, "Hey, what did you think of Star Wars?" "Well, I've never seen it." And your response is like, how in the world is this person, what rock do they live under? Well, there's one trilogy that I never saw, even after 4 years of film school and many years working at Blockbuster.
That's surprising, the film school thing, that you hadn't seen these movies.
Haven't seen these movies, and I always got that response, and I always vowed, I was like, before I die, I'll watch all three of these films so I can give an honest opinion about them, and that is the Godfather trilogy. And so now I feel my conscience is a little bit better. So I feel like there really isn't anything that if somebody said, "Oh, you hadn't seen this?" I mean, right. I think I've seen this was the last three films that I think if anybody who is a fan of film should see that I finally saw.
Speaking of that, and we'll get to, like you said, later on. Speaking of that, we're going to have a little bit of a format change, kind of. We're going to do, because we feel that, look, when I started this thing, I did the intro. I say, you know, movies, television, video games, books, comic books, you know, all that stuff. And we do know, it is conscious to us that we've really been more of a movie podcast. And we understand that because we are movie guys, first and foremost, even before video games and things of that nature. But I mention all that stuff, not just to play it safe, because in case I did want to talk about a comic book or I did want to talk about music, that I can, which is, to be honest with you guys, that's one of the reasons why that's in there. I did actually want to talk about it. So, and we do actually want to express some of that other kind of stuff. So, what we're going to do is, starting now, is that we're going to do a movie review, like we always do. We are going to do some news, but we're going to narrow the news down a little bit to more of a condensed array of some of the more important, at least that we think, more of the important topics that also that you guys might think is more topical. Because I know that I could listen to news all day long about movies and stuff. Matter of fact, I do, and I read stuff. Even before we narrowed stuff down, I could do that. But we understand that some of you guys may not be as hardcore as we are about this kind of stuff, so we want to kind of narrow it down to more general topics and things that are relevant. After the news, we're going to go into some more kind of personable kind of stuff. Like this week, I'm going to talk about some graphic novels that I've been going over through the past month or so. That I'm one of them in particular that I'm really, really excited to tell you guys about. Really, thus far, they've been really independent comics, and there's two reasons why. Now I'll tell you what. Now I'll get into that when we get to it. And then probably lastly is we're going to do something that's kind of like a spotlight on something that we either think that isn't talked about much, or maybe a movie or a video game or something that we have just that we've watched over again or replayed over again, and that we really want to express and make sure that maybe people might know about it if they don't know about it. And unlike, because we talked, he talked about the Flight of the Navigator on one of the weeks, and so it's pretty much going to be a more of a positive thing. And so I mean, it's got, you know, if so, it's going to be something that we want to recommend versus something that maybe we watched over again and didn't like as much. So it's going to be more something that maybe we can recommend that somebody can go watch and even then make their decision on their own if they like it or don't. Anyway, so that's how it's going to go, at least right now, and then other things. And also, the thing we might actually see if we can get in there as well is, like, other pieces. Like, I've been collecting vinyl for a while. I know Ken's starting to collect vinyl again. I've probably been collecting vinyl for probably, I mean, not a long time, but maybe about 6 months or so, maybe closer to a year. Just getting back into that kind of thing. And so maybe going over a couple of things that I'd picked up, and or maybe even some video games and things that we picked up, recent pickup kind of things. I don't know if Ken may have some. I know I got a lot of stuff, but we'll just kind of wing it on that kind of stuff. But anyway, just to kind of get more subject, more categories in there, as I promised in the intro that we would do, at least that I exclaimed that I would do in this intro. And plus, this is stuff that I've been thinking about. So it's not only that. I mean, I want to talk about that stuff. Anyways, well, then let's get right into it. If you've been watching the TV, because I'm sure you've seen the TV spots for it, this week, the movie that we're going to be reviewing is X-Men Apocalypse. And, of course, you've probably read that on the description, so what am I talking about? But X-Men Apocalypse just came out. Brand new Bryan Singer film. This is his, let's see, one, two, Futures Past. This is his fourth one that he's done. You know, he really helped open up the genre of video game movies starting in 2000 with the original X-Men. Of course, then it carries on. Actually, the way I see it is it started with Stephen Norrington with Blade in 99, 2000 with X-Men and Bryan Singer, and then, of course, Sam Raimi for 2001 and Spider-Man. That's the reason that we have the movies that we have today. These comic book movies that we have today are because of those three guys. Even Norrington, I'm going to give you some props on that, because Blade 1 was a good movie, though it's dated now. Blade 2 was the better of it. But if it wasn't for the job that he did, whether it be better or worse, or whichever one was better, Blade 1 was successful. I remember seeing that thing in the theater and really, really been blown away. And a lot of people always mention that most people didn't know Blade was a Marvel property when it came out in 99. I did, but there's a lot of people that didn't. Maybe that's one of the reasons why it works so well. And well, you know, Wesley Snipes was fun to watch. Anyway, X-Men Apocalypse is what just came out. There's a lot of there's been a lot of other comic book movies these days to live up to that has set the bar. So where does X-Men Apocalypse land? I'm gonna go ahead and throw that over to you, Ken, since I've been talking so much. What out of the gate, what is it? How did you feel? X-Men Apocalypse.
Well, my expectations were low going in, and that's because unfortunately, I listened to critics a lot, but a lot of them said that overall the balance of the movie wasn't well, and just said, you know, after something like Captain America: The Civil War, it's just, you know, they feel that it's kind of the whole comic book heroes saving the world's kind of wore out its welcome. What I have to say is I enjoyed it a lot more than what I thought it was, because, like I said, I had really low expectations going in.
Okay, well, let me, don't mean to interrupt you. I was just thinking, go ahead and finish what you're saying there, and then I'm going to ask you what you thought positives were. We're going to break it down that way as I'm thinking here. Yeah. Positives were and negatives were, but go ahead and give your overview, and I'll give you my overview, and then we'll talk about positives.
But just to kind of summarize, I guess where I'm going to come with the positive negatives overall is there were a lot of scenes that were entertaining. I thought the pacing of the movie was a little bit off. I thought it didn't really have a clear focus as far as like where it wanted to go narrative wise. But it's just as simple as Bryan Singer, thank you for the first two X-Men movies. Thank you for bringing us Days of Future Past, and I appreciate Apocalypse, but if I could see you personally, I'd say let's hand it over to some new blood, because it felt like a X2 era kind of comic book movie, but in this case I didn't think it was very positive compared to like a Marvel movie these days. But overall it was entertaining, and anybody that is a fan of the X-Men movies, then I definitely recommend to see it in theaters.
Yeah, I've been worried about this for a while. I've been saying this and I agree. It's I think the biggest problem with this movie is in its style, and by what I mean by that is the way of making these movies have changed drastically since 2003 or whenever X2 came out, certainly 2000, and even beyond. It's just really too formulaic. It doesn't really feel like it takes a lot of chances. And it's weird when you've got a movie like with Apocalypse in it. You know, you go, wow, the guy said he didn't take a lot of chances and he's got Apocalypse in it. Well, you know, this is going to be a spoiler-free review, but in my opinion, I mean, Apocalypse doesn't do anything. I mean, it'll give it a keep an overview. It's a movie that just feels stale, in my opinion, as far as where we sit today as a comic book movie society these days. And I mean, really, comic books is what's taken over the action genre that was of the 80s and 90s. The action genre has really all become comic book, really. You know, of course, there's Fast and Furious and some Bourne movies, but really, what's the big daddies of them all are these comic book movies, and it just feels stale in comparison, certainly based upon their own other franchises like Deadpool. And I was telling you this, and then we'll go into positive and negative. It's one of the things I've been saying about when a couple weeks ago we were talking about it. What do we think? Do you think? I mean, because it's been kind of getting neutral reviews in the past couple weeks for people that have kind of seen it. Maybe is that what do you think? If it turns out to be bad, what do you think? And it was simple. I don't care, unfortunately. And what I mean by that is, because of Deadpool, they've announced New Mutants, and then because of New Mutants, they're going to have X-Force, and hopefully X-Factor and things of that nature down the road. It's really become, that's the Fox franchise, that's a side of the Fox franchise that I'm looking forward to. Deadpool 2, we're going to get Cable. New Mutants, we're going to get all those guys. Of course, X-Force, you know. So that is what I'm looking for. If they stay in the vein of what they've that they've established with Deadpool, because they even said that they think that you know X-Force might be R and all this kind of stuff. And to reiterate, it doesn't necessarily have to be R to be good, but if they think it's a positive forward or if it fits the mold, then there you are. But that's the stuff I'm looking forward to. Because Deadpool was so good, and unless they screw these new ones up, these other things, as I just mentioned, then this is what I'm looking forward to. So, being that that's the case, if this movie winds up being fantastic, that's nothing but pluses. That's nothing but thumbs up. If it turns out to be not so great, it doesn't matter to me, because I've kind of lost, it's kind of lost its luster, the X-Men franchise. I mean, they're doing another one. They've already said that the next one's going to be in the 90s. Which is cool to me as far as the eras, but I don't really care. If it works, if it doesn't, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So anyways, that's kind of the overview of it, is it feels kind of stale to me, and well-made movie, but it just kind of feels like it's the way of making the movie is outdated. So anyways, I'm going to throw it back to you, Ken, about some positives. We'll start positively. What do you think is some positives?
Well, to further what you're talking about, and I'll put my little spin on it as well, is the problem is the X-Men movie with The Last Stand, it failed. So they had to reboot this thing. So basically they've retconned the first two, or didn't. The timeline is a whole big problem with this. So it's basically like each movie
even made fun of that.
Yeah, each movie you go into, it's like a whole new timeline with the X-Men movies.
Well, they've been consistent with the past few, but still, it's so complicated.
But like I said, it's the fact that they made a stinker in The Last Stand, and they had to reboot this thing. So it's like now it's like playing catch up. And the one thing that I'll say that I have the biggest problem with is it's still not modern day.
Keep in mind we're doing positives right now.
Yeah, it's okay. Here's the deal. The positivity is like I did like the fact that it is set in the 80s because I love the 80s. I'll give it that. I have to say though that my spin on it though is like I do care. Like I said, if this movie was good or bad, I do care, and that is because I'm looking at all right. Each one of these is a stepping stone, but now the thing is. Where they're succeeding is the cast, as I believe there wasn't really anybody in the cast that, even Jennifer Lawrence, like I thought going into this, I'm going to hate Jennifer Lawrence, and she was fine. There was a lot of people who said she melted in. But I can say that right now I'm pretty pumped for the cast of this, and if they're going to keep doing X-Men movies, I think they're doing right with this cast and the direction they're going in. Quicksilver, again, is another standout in this. The scenes with him is probably my favorite stuff in there. Magneto is always a solid in these. In fact, it's to the point where between Fassbender and McKellen, I can't say who I like more is Magneto. It's probably just equal. But I really like Fassbender's take. McAvoy again, great. And Nightcrawler was actually a pretty decent surprise. Has a lot of humor that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, a lot of the humor did come from him. A good amount of the humor in the movie came from
so
him.
So I can't say that all right, the cast isn't refreshed and revitalized. I'm digging the cast, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it's going. And the thing is, one of the biggest things in these, small as stupid as it is like we said, is like it feels like kind of like the early stages of comic book movies, but man, You get your title score and you get a title screen again, and that's the one thing that I've
those X when it comes on and goes through the tunnel and does the theme.
You get an actual opening, not here's the title. Let's get right into the movie. It's like you get a sequence before it, and then they set it up for the title, which I thought was
just a title, because I think Batman v Superman did that, and there's some other stuff like Terminator 3 did that back in the day. Just said Terminator 3 Rise of Machines.
And that's the thing is, we might be in the minority. I mean, I guess people these days are just like, but I'm sorry, I'm a sucker for that. So right off the bat, I was like, all right, I'll take that all day long. But I mean, I said I really like the characters. The characters is what makes me give this a positive score. So that's what I'm saying. If you're wondering like, well, how is Cyclops in this and how is Jean Grey? I really enjoyed both of them. So that's what I'm saying is like, I'm on board with this team. And then, and like I said, I do care to an extent because I'm hoping that we get an even better movie with the next X-Men. Cause like I said, because Fox has this universe, Marvel's not getting it back. It's like, I want the X-Men movies to get up to the point to a Deadpool and X-Force. So that way, we've got a complete universe that can rival Marvel and DC. And there you go. You got three comic book universes.
Well, yeah, the reason why I say I don't care is because it's not really working. So if I was to care, I mean, so I guess my point was that, like, if it wound up being great, like I said, that's great. I'm not going to boo on that. But I can't, it's like giving up hope. I can't get sad every time they fail. Now, I say that, I mean, Days of Future Past was good. So, I mean, it sounds like that they've made a whole bunch of bad ones in a row. Matter of fact, they've made a lot of good ones in a row. First Class was fantastic. Days of Future Past was really good. This one here, positive. I agree with you on the cast. The cast is great. Sophie Turner, the Game of Thrones girl that plays Jean Grey, really is. I like her better than Famke. I really like I like the idea that they're younger here, because I kind of wish that's the way they would have went originally. But also know that, back in 2000, people didn't know if a movie like X-Men would work, so they're not going to hire and cast teenagers or 20-somethings to play teenagers. So I get that. So I don't blame them for that. But I am glad. So I guess if there's a positive also to having to reboot the thing, is that they can now kind of do it right. There were a couple things they did in the plot that I'm going to try to scoot around that I actually did like. They rectified a bad outing on at the end of this movie. There's for one of the characters, they really did rectify a story faux pas that they tried to do earlier in one of the earlier movies that didn't work out well, which is a famous piece of X-Men lore that I think that they're doing better. And and there was, we always talk about having like X-Men teaming and doing stuff like that, which you don't really see, certainly didn't see in the early Singer eras, at least the first two, which is kind of a problem, because I mean it was always Wolverine and then the X-Men are just behind him somewhere. You know, they're not even doing anything. Scott didn't do shit in the fucking second one. He got captured with Xavier. Like, come on, man. But anyway, so they actually get to do some kind of team stuff at the end of it there. And but yeah, that was a good piece. There was an awesome song. I just want to say somewhere, this is kind of a spoiler, I guess, and there's a scene in the movie where they use Metallica's Four Horsemen in the scene, which of course is fitting. It's a little on the nose too, if you know what it is. I mean, Four Horsemen, the Apocalypse and what have you, but that was an awesome surprise.
And you got an interesting version of the old 80s song, I Ran.
Oh, yeah. Like an Iranian version. Which made me snicker, like a,
yeah.
Like a Pakistani, or yeah. I guess they're Afghan, I don't know, wherever it was.
Yeah.
So that was awesome. And then there's also because look, a lot of this stuff's been retconned since First Contact, so once again, the timeline, I don't really know how it works. But there's definitely a scene in here which kind of retcons the Weapon X program that has been established in X2. And some might go, oh no, because X2 is the best, you know, arguably the best X-Men movie thus far. But the way they did this here, as far as just, all I'll say is the look of it, was really cool. And all those little nods, these kind of nod things like that to the source material, really gets people like myself, and I know a lot of other people, jonesing, because I thought that was really, really cool. I was surprised, to be honest with you. I didn't, to see this. So, stuff like that. I'm sure, am I missing anything? I'm trying to think of, McAvoy, like I said, all the cast was good. Jennifer Lawrence, yeah, I heard the same thing that she phoned in, and I didn't really see that. The character is kind of a two-tone kind of deal. I mean, she's not like really, you know, she's kind of sour. I mean, if I was to compare, like, let's say Days of Future Past to this, maybe it wasn't as, it was.
Well, people were saying she phoned it in.
I didn't see that.
I didn't necessarily see her phoning it in. But like I said, what's different about this movie is, and what I'll give it is, like we said, you know, like X2 focused on Wolverine. This one really doesn't have I didn't see a central focus.
There is not a central focus.
Which, like I said, is positive, and you get a lot of cool scenes, but like I said, we'll mention the negative
but
as well.
But that's also a negative.
Yeah. I will say, though, if you're a fan of Magneto in these new movies, There's a tragic scene followed by probably one of my favorite Magneto and action scenes right after that.
There's about in the woods.
In the woods, okay. I don't know what you thought about that scene, but that was it wasn't necessarily like I said, it was what he did. It wasn't necessarily the impact of it. Like I said, we'll talk about not spoil plot points, but there are some melodramatic stuff in this movie as well. But for anybody who loves watching Magneto in action, there was a scene that I really thought was
Fassbender's
kick-ass.
Like you're saying, McAvoy, Fassbender, they're always. Yeah. It's just like Stewart and McKellen. They're the play. There's not really a lot of worry for those guys. So I guess we'll go into a little bit of, and if we can think of any more positives as we go, we'll mention it. But I guess we'll go into a little bit of the negatives and. I guess I'll start on this one. And first off, straight out of the bag is Apocalypse, which is kind of a bummer being that's the namesake of this movie. Oscar Isaacs was awesome as Poe Dameron. I think he's a good actor and all this. And it's hard for press for me to even say that he did a bad job in this movie. I don't know if he did a bad job. I just don't like this rendition. I just don't like it. And plus also, I think I might have said earlier, there's nothing for him. He doesn't really do anything in this movie. He's just like Messiah, and he just you know, he gathers his four horsemen and then pokes around. I just didn't care. I didn't care for his voice. I didn't really care for what he did. There's a couple cool things that he did in the movie, some of his power. But also, there's a lot of things I didn't like. Like, he would just make something out of the blue. Like, okay, I'm going to make a, you know, I'll just disintegrate that gun. I don't know. I'll just, because that's what I can do. It's one of those things where it's like, I wonder if the writers are like, well, how do we get out of this situation? I don't know. Apocalypse can, he can do this then. Okay, that's a good way to get out of this situation. Apocalypse does that. Like, man alive. And plus, like, there's an opening sequence before it gets to the titles that he was talking about. And, listen, we all know exposition is boring. And we know we don't need to be told everything. But it opens up, and it's like an Egypt situation. And there's this process happening I'll just say that Apocalypse goes through this procedure in order to stay immortal. And some stuff happens, and I guess we're just gonna. It happened. I don't know what the hell it was. I don't know what was going on. They didn't bother to tell us even later on what exactly is going on. Then some shit happens, some gold stuff, and some stuff goes down, and some shit comes up, and I guess it does something to them.
Because I agree with you about Apocalypse, and I believe the problem with Apocalypse is, like, anybody that knows a lot about film is the best villains are the ones that have a great motive. And Apocalypse's motive is about as generic as hell as you can get. Apocalypse's motive is, I need to cleanse the world, dominate it, rebuild it, and that's it. Yeah. And instead of this first sequence where we show Apocalypse in this procedure that you're talking about, I go back to the first X-Men, in which the villain Magneto, we see him as a child and basically why he's become who he has in the first X-Men. And in that first sequence that we have, I see his motive, mm-hmm. and I care about Magneto. This did nothing.
Well, something you can identify more to as far as empathy is the Holocaust. You
know, right, I
mean, you're like, so
and so there's no character motive at all for Apocalypse. It's like, I'm the big baddie who wants to change the world. Like, you know, that,
I see
that's
the world
it.
As bad.
Right.
I'm a god, false god, whatever, and I need to. It's, you know, they tried to make his motive like questionable. Like, okay, is he bad? Is he good? Because he's doing this for the better of Earth. You know, we've created weapons of mass destruction. So seeing that we've done that, we'll cleanse everybody. Only the strong will survive, and we'll rebuild again. And I don't know. It's just a little bit of too a la fucking, I don't know, like, you know, just kind of that kind of thing, which I didn't care for. Maybe there's elements of that. I know there's been different versions of Apocalypse in the comics, different incarnations, and so maybe that's one of it. I don't know. I just didn't care for it here.
Well, and then not only that, but his origin is just kind of briefly thrown out there too. It's like, well, he was the first mutant, got buried, or, you know, been gone or whatever for however long. Now he's back.
Yeah.
Okay. And they don't even show anything like that. Like, it's just, well, I mean, they show it, but like I said, it's just this generic. It's just like, okay, well, why should I care about this villain at all then?
All right, and to move on from that, as far as it's, but still staying in the same area, is that, you know, Apocalypse goes, and this isn't spoiling anything because this has been the trailers. You know that Angel is on his side, Storm is on his side, Magneto is on his side, and Psylocke is on his side. And you got, even though I don't care for Olivia Munn, and here's the thing, this goes into it. I don't care for Olivia Munn. I've said that in one of the podcasts. But give her some fucking lines.
Yeah. I'll say she's got the look of Psylocke.
She's got the look. 100%. Yeah. But give her some lines. And this is what goes into what I'm about to say here. You got all those people, these badass guys. You get Archangel, kind of. I mean, he's not blue, but I mean, he gets the metal wings. You got probably the best Storm that's been on screen. I'll go ahead and say it's the best Storm that's been on screen, in my opinion.
Did her accent get on your nerves?
No.
No?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I thought it might have.
Yeah, I remember that was something you said. No,
I didn't, because it felt natural.
Yeah.
Unlike Halle Berry in the first movie, it's like, oh no, we're doing her. I was like, you don't know how to do it. And that's why they slowly kind of took it away as the movie went along. It's like, yeah, she's not that good. we'll just kind of dial it down a little bit. Anyway, her accent seemed accurate to me, and it did, so it didn't get on my nerves. It's like, how can I guess you can go and listen to a Chinaman or somebody else with an accent, a French person, and just say, oh, that gets on my nerves. But I mean, if that's their accent, you know, and it's done correctly, then, you know, that's just the way it is. But anyway, my point is that you got all these great people, and then they give them cool costumes out of nowhere. Because I don't know how they get them. They get these cool costumes. I guess he makes them, because Apocalypse makes stuff out of thin air. So I guess he made those costumes for him. Because every time you see her, Storm in righty clothes, next time you see her, she's in some velvet or pleather, I don't know, whatever they are, plastic. What's the molding? We used to watch Face Off. What is that? That they use. Anyways, whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
They got these things. But you've got all these people surrounding him, and they don't do anything. Now, I was telling you as well, after he came out of there, that's the problem with these types, and that's what I mean by, I think, this style of movie making for these movies are a little outdated. Now, listen, every movie follows a three-act structure. Act 1, 2, 3, beginning, conflict, resolution. Okay? That's the way it goes. We know this. But these movies seem to settle on the fact that you just rely on that. And I was telling you, I said, though he doesn't shoot electricity or move metal, Captain America in Civil War goes to try to find, he's just strong, right? He's strong and he's got martial arts skills and what have you, and agile. He goes fairly early in the beginning of Civil War, try to find Bucky, goes to his apartment, then they have a cool action scene. They fly down some flights of stairs, and they beat people up and throw people's heads into the wall and throw them and bash them with shields and all this kind of cool stuff, which is fun. They didn't have to necessarily wait to the third act to do that. They did it there somewhere. Now, that's what it seems like to me in this, is that they just have to, they build everybody up, and they walk around, and they talk, and then they do something in the third act. So it just seems like it's just kind of like a slow burn, and it's a waste of time. It's, for me.
Well, that's something I agree with as well, is that by the time Days of Future Past was over, and I'm going, all right, well, the next X-Men, all right, man, we're going to see the X-Men together and everything. This one starts off with the X-Men disbanded.
Oh, and that's
disbanded again.
That's,
so it's like,
that's,
well,
what they're not even just disbanded. They're not even there. And that's what I've been waiting for. I heard there was a guy behind me that was like, because at the end of the movie, okay, see, they show it in the trailer, so this is not in the TV spot, so this is not a spoiler. At the end of the movie, they're all in like 90s cool gear. Cyclops has the looks like it's blue, but the blue outfit or whatever, and the belt that goes across his chest, and Mystique has the white stripe going down. Nightcrawler's in his kind of like red and black. I mean, it's from the comics, and it's, I mean, modified, but it's awesome. And the guy behind was like, man, it took, why, golly, Jesus Christ, got to wait to the next one. We're waiting 16 years for this, and they finally give us this at the very end. You are now X-Men. It was like, well, fuck. There's been 6 movies? We're not counting Wolverines?
Well, the thing is,
6 movies, and we still haven't got X-Men, really X-Men.
Well, and if you look at it, the title of these basically reboots, the first title is X-Men First Class. So just going by the titles, you figure, all right, well, they form at the end of the first one. There you go. And then that's a big problem. Is
And then Days of Future Past, they're kind of like X-Men in the future. But then he's got to go back to the past, and they're not X-Men.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of gather them together. And then this one here, it's like, you know, he's got the kids and the schools open, but he doesn't want to teach them how to combat. So I guess my point is it's like, you know, if you look at them as like chapters in a book, it makes sense. But I'm like, come on. We've been waiting forever. We've been waiting so long to see some X-Men. And then I'm glad. So if anything about the end of it was, it shows that somewhere, even if they only do it for one scene and let me down, somewhere in the next movie, they're going to be in their suits that we all love and fighting somebody. Rand, I don't want it to be a big baddie. I want it to open up and I want them to fight the Morlocks as they come out of the sewers.
Yeah.
I want them to fight just random mutants on the street that's trying to rob a bank or something. Because, I mean, that's what happens in the comics, that's what happens in the cartoon, and I know that you have to build to something bigger. But give me a team environment situation where they are X-Men and they've come to save the day. You know, like RoboCop 2? All those people are blowing up stuff or whatever, and all of a sudden a cop car comes around, they blow it up or whatever, and he steps out and he's like, you know, he walks out, your move, creep, you're like, yeah! That's what I want to start up, and people are, you know, accosting people, mutants are accosting people and breaking stuff, and all of a sudden you hear, they feel the wind go, and storm comes out, like lightning one of them's gun or whatever, and then Cyclops blows one of them away. Give me the, please!
And the thing is I guarantee with the next one it's gonna go that route. But like I said, because they rebooted this stuff, I think that they're like playing ultra safe with this stuff. And where like a Marvel is like, you know, we're succeeding with everything we're doing, so we're gonna take risks. Hell, even with Deadpool, because Fox was like, well, you know what? At $50 million, here you go do it. And those filmmakers pretty much had carte blanche on what they wanted to do, and they took major risk in that movie. But
they weren't risking anything.
But that's the thing is Fox didn't care about that. But Fox, it's like, especially after Fantastic Four, it's like X-Men is their thing right now. It's like their hand in the comic book pot, you know. So it's like, well, they're like, we've got to take it ultra safe, but they don't understand, like you said, like with viewers like you, that's like, I just want to see the X-Men. It's like you keep playing it safe, and you make these movies that structurally you're like, all right, well, it's all right. Characters are good, but overall, you're just like you said, I don't care because it's not. They haven't, you know.
It feels like seriously, you're in molasses. It's in slow motion. We've got to get them together again, and now I have to figure out that he has optic blasts, and then she's got to figure out that. This and this, and Storm's not even with him. She's a horseman, and now she's at him at the end. Once again, it feels like for 16 years I've been waiting and going, oh, on the next one we're gonna, something's gonna be cool.
Yeah.
And then what? We get to the next one. Oh, on the next one, something's gonna be cool. All right, and the next one you go, and so on. You get what I'm saying. Now the problem is, with an exception of the third one, they've been making good movies. If you see me quote unquote air quotes, they've been making good movies. So that means that they're not bad movies, but they're not delivering. They're disappointing. I think I told you that. I said, I feel like I'm disappointed with these movies.
Well, it's funny. They're good movies, but what it sounds like is they're movies that piss you off, though. It's like, all right, yeah, you're good movies, but you can be great movies.
And I'm like, well.
And like I said, a lot of it, too, is I also believe that if they get somebody else in to direct the next X-Men movie, because I will say X-Men First Class, even though, you know, again, suffers from the same problem. You don't get the X-Men together. But it is X-Men First Class felt fresh.
Good.
Yeah.
I really like that movie a lot. And I like Days of Future Past. I agree. We were talking earlier. I agree. I think First Class is the better of these new movies. It's the best of these new movies. I like, don't get me wrong, I like X-Men First Class. I like Days of Future Past. I kind of like Apocalypse. I don't know, maybe. There are good scenes in it. There are good moments in it. But overall, it wasn't. I didn't think it was that great. I think it was a downgrade from Days of Future Past. But like I said, that's what's so hard is they're making good to decent movies, but they're just not delivering on anything. They're disappointing. Just, they're letting me down. I'm like, no. I just said it just now. Well, by the looks of it, and if they don't, I'm gonna burn the building down. But by the looks of it, they're gonna have the X-Men as a team somewhere. But hell. I wouldn't be surprised if 3 years down the line I get back and if we're still doing a podcast or turn around and say, well, I thought they were going to do it. Maybe the next one. Because that's the only thing I know of. Yes, they give us stuff. In Days of Future Past, there was that cool little thing at the very beginning that was showing them kind of as a team and Iceman and all this kind of stuff. But then it was all for naught because then they used the play. Yeah, everything's used as a plot device. They did that and then Iceman died and Colossus died and whatever. And then, whoop, it erased it because they did the going back in time thing. So, we saw it, but really didn't see it because it didn't really happen. You know? And it's like, that's what these movies are. It's like, I'm going to tease you, and then it doesn't really happen. You know what I mean? You tease Wolverine in the second X-Men movie. You give him a little bit of berserker rage, but they were still too scared to do anything really good with it. Now, there's a pretty cool berserker rage in this one here, but...
And something else, just looking at the overall picture, too, is something that I mentioned is... They're in the opening stages as well as far as this X-Men universe. So, okay, now we're going to get another Deadpool. we're going to get an X-Force movie. I hope somewhere down the line we're going to get an X-Factor movie, but because of something that happens in this movie, we might not. But hopefully we'll get an X-Factor movie. The Gambit movie could still be on later on. But the thing is what hurts these X-Men movies, too, is where Marvel pretty much gives you, like, on average, maybe one standalone film and then a team film a year. You might think, like I said, I thought Civil War was good. I didn't think it was great. But, man, that doesn't change my feelings for this Doctor Strange coming up. I'm anticipating this thing, and this could probably be my favorite movie of the year, this Doctor Strange. Like I said, Ant-Man, didn't think it was great at first. Ended up loving it later. But I don't ever hate any Marvel movie because if I think something's just okay as far as Marvel movie goes, in about 6 months, here's another one. And then something in that one might make me like the other one more. That's the point. So that's what I'm talking about. Is like, I'm like, all right, fool me once, fool me twice. This third time, though, you still got me with these characters. But by this time this third X-Men comes out, hopefully we'll have the X-Force, we'll have the second Deadpool, and I want that same kind of feeling. It's just right now, it's funny, it's kind of like Marvel's got the right flow going right now. DC, to me, is going way too fast. And then the X-Men universe is going like a turtle space, you know? So it's like, they just, like I said, once they get there,
though. Well, we talked about it today, that what they should have done, I mean, hindsight's 2020, but what they should have done was Apocalypse shouldn't, this felt like an event film. And for one, they should have did him better. They should have did him, in my opinion, more like the early comic version, like where he could grow. I mean, that was something else in the trailer that was a letdown. They show him grow in the trailer, but when you see it,
it's not in the context of
what you think. And he's this overpower kind of guy, this god that, you know, just can't take down no matter what you do. But that sounds like an event thing, right? That sounds like a Thanos for on the Marvel Studios side. It sounds like, you know, Darkseid on the DC side, right? So that's what it should have built to. It should have been like three X-Men movies that dealt with smaller, you know, Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, Hellfire Club, things of that nature. And all and looming in the background in of each one of those, this threat, this looming threat of the first ever mutant and blah, blah, blah. And then lead to an event movie. And that's what this X-Men Apocalypse should have been.
But
it's so, it felt like it was, it's funny, it's as far as we keep talking about being slow to get to where we want it to be, the pace of this was just, because there's so much stuff, they're like, here we go, and there's we're in Cairo now, we're over here in this, we're over here in that, we're in New York here, we're in that, and it's just like, okay, all right, but.
I totally agree with the fact that maybe Apocalypse, they shouldn't have brought him out right now, like go ahead, because how cool would it have been if, because, you know, Marvel did this as well. But how cool would it have been if we've had an X-Force movie, we've had Deadpool, we've had X-Men, let's say, and they do an X-Factor, New Mutants. You got all these universes they've set up, and then they do Apocalypse. But you don't see Apocalypse first in an X-Men movie. You see him in New Mutants. Or you see him in X-Force.
Well, right.
Kind of like how they did Guardians of the Galaxy and Thanos. It's like you get that snippet and lead up to it. Right, yeah.
I mean, they've been teasing Thanos since the end of Avengers 1, but yeah, then he makes an appearance in Guardians.
Because when you get Thanos full force, not only are you going to get one movie with him, you're going to get two movies with Thanos, back to back, pretty much. Yeah. So it's like, you know, so that, I mean, I totally agree there. It's like, maybe they should have gone. Like I said, it
was wasted.
They are still in the mindset of the old school mindset, and like I said,
movies will kill some people. We'll do another one.
But I think that
villains will just, you know.
But I think that's and like I was saying before, I have no problem with Michael Bay Transformers movies. But now after this X-Men movie, I see all the people that are saying, please, just somebody else direct Transformer movies, because it's dated now. It's like you don't get much. You know, expectations out of the Transformer. Like I said, you know, a lot of people don't like them. I still have fun with the Transformer movies, but if they turn around and they said, I don't like Justin Lin's doing the next Transformer movies, I'm like, oh.
Well, or, you know. That's if we're talking about that, yeah. I mean, I enjoy them. I have them. I admittedly just have fun with those movies if we're going to talk about that. But not a soul. Even if I was a person that was just loved them to death, I can't imagine one person that would disagree with that.
Right.
I mean, come on. Everybody's
well,
ready.
But
you know, I don't want Singer to do every one of these things. I don't want the Russos to do every Marvel movie they're doing. I mean, I think just out of workload after these Avenger movies they're going to be done. But I mean, you know, everybody should get a fresh take on it. You got that's what producers are for, to keep the same tone there, and then other people come in with different visions to add to that, to bring their own flavor. And so, absolutely, 100%.
Seeing in context, I think that's one of the big solutions with this X-Men series. Now, I think you get somebody fresh blood in there. Like I said, we talked about First Class and Vaughn. It's like, all right, let's get somebody else in there. Let's get their take on it. Let's get Singer in that executive producer. Because I can't deny the guy did resurrect the series pretty much from obscurity.
And he's a good director, too.
Yeah, he's a good director. But let's get that guy in the executive producer mode, the Steven Spielberg mode. Let's get him to oversee
and help with this. Because I mentioned it to you. I mean, that's what he was for First Class.
Yeah.
He executive produced First Class. Matthew Vaughn, bright new vision, came in. And really, it's a very unique, it's probably one of the most unique X-Men movies out there, because like even that whole like whenever Xavier does the his you know mind thing when he goes to control somebody, they use those like still frame images that goes up to him. I mean you know, that's kind of a poor man's way of doing it, but it was interesting.
Yeah,
but anyway, so we've talked about that a little bit, so let's go ahead and run down a rating, since that's what we do. What do you want to rate X-Men Apocalypse?
Well, I can't give it like a real high rating. There are scenes I absolutely loved in this movie.
Yeah, that's the final thought.
And like you said, you know, it's like, well, you know, whether you know it's a great movie, a good movie, if it entertains you, you can't give it a bad rating. So that's what I'm saying. I'm gonna give it a bad rating. So I'm gonna say, just for the simple fact that I do enjoy the X-Men still, I'm a huge fan of them. And the way the movie was executed, entertainment factor, I'll give it a 7. A 7 out of 10.
Okay. Well, we're pretty close, actually. I'm giving it a 6.5. It's definitely above average. There's really cool moments in it. You know, it was a well-made movie. It just wasn't put together well. It's kind of like BVS. Zack Snyder knows how to make a movie. He knows how to make a movie, a good-looking movie. It just wasn't put together very well. And I think for this particular outing, I think Brian, the same thing with Brian Singer. He was a good director, but he didn't, it wasn't put together. It was too ambitious. It was too big for the britches on this. So, but anyway, so 6.5 is what I'm giving X-Men Apocalypse. You said 7?
7 out of 10.
So
yep.
7 out of 10. So there that is. All right, so let's go on into some news, and let's see what's first. All right, so some news. We're going to send it right over to you if you want to just go ahead and start reading off what kind of topics we have this week.
All right, so for you people that enjoy streaming more than putting your DVD in your DVD player, your Blu-ray in your Blu-ray player, Disney has now signed with Netflix exclusively, so all the Star Wars films, the Marvel films, and everything will all be only on Netflix. No Hulu, no Amazon. So basically, so if you want to have that late night binge, and trust me, I'm one of those too that sometimes I'm like, you know what? I don't want to flip out the DVDs and all that. I'm just going to go straight through. You'll get to see the whole Star Wars trilogy. I'm sure New Hope will be our Force Awakens would be on there too, and same with the Marvels. So,
well, certainly Force Awakens will be on there because that's Disney. Now,
yeah.
What I do wonder though is if the original trilogy, because I know it's still Fox, I think still owns that, correct?
But it's Lucasfilm.
But they have the right to distribute. That's what everybody's been worrying about as far as the problem of, are we going to have a total set? Are we going to have a Blu-ray set? Episode 1 to episode 10, or whatever they wind up doing. Because Disney bought, when they bought Lucasfilm, that comes along with Force Awakens and after, by my understanding. Anyway, but I'm sure that will lapse. Here's the deal. It's not going to last forever. That's going to lapse at a certain point, and maybe it has. So I don't know. I don't have all the information at me. But still, it's a big move because, like you were saying, Hulu, Amazon, Prime, or whatever, all that stuff, they don't get it. And Disney is the big guys these days. Like it or not, they're the big conglomerate that's got Marvel. They've got, you know, Disney movies. Zootopia, one of the better movies of the year. I mean, it's funny.
Pixar films.
Civil War. Well, no, it wasn't. It was a Disney film.
Zootopia. No, I'm just saying Pixar films.
But yeah, Zootopia was one of the It was the highest grossing movie until Civil War came and beat it last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. And I watched it. I don't know if I mentioned it on another one. It really is. If you guys got kids out there and may have to suffer through some maybe not so good kid movies, this is one of them.
And I'll back it up because I recently saw it this week. It's my favorite animated movie. Period. Like it's Incredibles, it was up there, but this. Screw it. If you don't have kids, go see this movie. Well, it's very, very good.
Well, that's what I was telling a friend of mine. Of course, see it anyways. But I'm saying if you have kids, and sometimes you may have to sit through some of the stuff, and you may like, I mean, they do a lot of good animated movies these days. But if if sometimes you sit through some of them that you don't care about more often than not, this is one, if your kids want to see it, that it really is. It's actually a good one. But you're going to have all that kind of stuff in there. So that's a big deal for me.
Well, and then you're not only that, but you're going to have your Rebel show, the Star Wars Rebel show, like all the TV stuff that's associated with it. Agent Shields, I think, is already on there.
Yeah. I mean,
but what's
that's
cool.
That's why it doesn't surprise me, because they've already got this Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage.
But now what will be neat about this, though, is that if anybody, watches TV on Netflix, one of the pains will be the fact that you've got to wait usually like a year for the current season.
Here's my problem with the Netflix thing. Now, it's not going to be with Star Wars and all these other things, but since we're talking about Netflix, let me go ahead and address it. When are they going to put out DVD or Blu-rays for like Daredevil or Jessica Jones, which I wasn't that big of a fan of? It was still good, but it was like, when are they going to do this? It's right. Like they're not going to do it. And if you couldn't tell, that me and Ken are these old codgers that like physical media, that likes to hold something in their hand and put it in.
Well, and on top of that, it's the fact that we know if they release a physical media of, let's say, Daredevil Season 1, we might get some commentary, some behind the scenes. So, see, you don't have any of that right now.
I just
so
don't
like,
understand. I mean, I thought, okay, second season is going to come around, they're going to release Daredevil Season 1. Do you know anything to the contrary? Because I haven't
seen, I don't think. I know out in the wild I haven't seen Daredevil. Now, it might be on, maybe it's in Amazon. I don't know.
I haven't. I've looked before, and I haven't seen it. But anyway, So yeah, that's a big move for them. Actually, not too surprised because they already had some of that kind of stuff. But really getting ahead of the game there as far as exclusives. I mean, like I said, Disney's the big guy. So cool. Congratulations to those guys.
So keeping it on a kind of comic book related kind of stuff here, there was rumors of Vincent D'Onofrio showing up in Spider-Man: Homecoming as Kingpin. And he debunked the rumors of that. So if you were thinking that Kingpin might be in the new Spider-Man movie, he is not going to be.
That's kind of a bummer. See, I didn't hear about that initially, but I did see a headline of that the other day, and I didn't click on the link, even though I kind of wanted to. I just didn't. I don't know why. But, Kingpin was a major villain for Spider-Man, and my God, D'Onofrio is knocking that shit out of the park. So, man, that's... It's kind of a bummer. I'm not shocked by this either, but man, that would have been so fantastic.
I still feel, because I think the him debunking the rumors was like, okay, I'm not a major villain in this, but I still have hopes for a cameo.
Yeah.
That you might see him in his limo or something like that
if they keep it in continuity, he's not gonna be a limo because he's still in jail. But if you remember, Daredevil takes place in Hell's Kitchen, which is New York, and of course Spider-Man is in New York, so why not?
Or have a mention of him something. Sure. Yeah, maybe a newscast or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
I don't know if Daredevil Season 3 is going to be out before the Spider-Man movie, but let's say he breaks out, and he will in Season 3, so have this newspaper, the Daily Bugle. Hey, Kingpin breaks out, Wilson Fisk breaks out of maximum security prison, blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. That I'll take. I mean, just the mention of it, so... kind of a bummer, but I didn't hear about it anyway. So
here's a spinoff news. We got Fast and Furious is going to have a spinoff with the Dwayne the Rock Johnson's character of Hobbs, which is pretty cool because if you could say there's one guy that you could believe that kicked the shit out of Vin Diesel, was definitely Hobbs in the Fast and the Furious movies. So again, it's proves the Rock is just everywhere. Like spinoff of Bourne, or not? He could be in the Bourne universe. We reported that. Now spinoff on Fast and Furious. You can see him on the beach in Baywatch. You can see him
flying high on some bullshitty San Andreas crap. Have you guys watched that movie? I'm going to go on a tangent just for one quick second. If any of you guys have watched San Andreas, I'm impressed because I watched 5 minutes of it, and when that car, and I'm speaking only to you guys that have seen it. When that girl flies off the cliff in that car and it does a comedic spin turn as she goes, ah, like a 1950s spider movie, and does a horrible little spin around, and that, and it literally goes from tail end to the front of the car to the back, flip down the thing, and then she lands and is like, oh, and then it cuts the rug, like, I'm coming for you, don't worry. I was like, I can't take this. No way in the world will I watch any more of this.
Yeah, it was bad. I watched it all. I'm just one of the suckers that I love The Rock so much. And I was like, okay. And again, when you showed me that scene again, I think I wasn't even paying attention to the beginning of the movie. I was like warming up or whatever, probably on the internet or whatnot. But when you showed me that scene again, it was definitely
that
just
was the worst thing
way over the top.
The worst thing I've seen in cinema in a long time. Coming from supposedly a serious movie, a drama. I mean, as serious as a disaster movie can get. I mean, Roland Emmerich has kind of shut the bed with some of his stuff, but nothing ever been to this caliber. I mean, it was literally like a Laurel and Hardy joke at the beginning because she was like reaching for her bag in the back seat, and then, meow, oh, do you think she's going to get hit by a car? Meow, oh, nope, she's just, meow, nope, she did this, and then finally, ah, and he does this stuff I just mentioned. I mean, come on. I'm just, I'm sorry, I'm not, listen, I'm not a movie snob. I'm not. I've watched a lot of turds, and that's fine. I couldn't get past this. I couldn't do it. And I did have intentions to maybe come back to it, but then the more I thought about it, I said, no. Yeah, you know what? I can live my life peacefully without ever seeing this shit ever. So, anyways, I'm sorry. I did try to watch it because it's Dwayne. I like The Rock. He's fun. But anyway, but he's gonna be.
So we're going to get some Hobbs standalone movies.
I'm not shocked by that either. I mean, because he's quite frankly one of the reasons, I'm not going to give full credit, one of the reasons why the Fast and Furious has continued
found
on
resurgence,
past
the
third one. So, yeah, good for you, man. I mean, look, this guy's got so much work. He is the Arnold Schwarzenegger of this time.
Yeah.
The Sylvester Stallone / Arnold Schwarzenegger / Chuck Norris / your boy from Death Wish, Charles Bronson. He's everything, bro. He's all of it. He is the only ex. Who's the ex? I mean, it's funny. Vin Diesel is the action, but this guy is the definitive action hero of the day.
Well, you just said it earlier in the podcast was, you know, in this day and age, the comic book movie has kind of taken over the 80s action franchise. Like you said, it's kind of like it's pretty much dominated, and for him to be in so many of these franchises that are not comic book related. And then, of course, you know, I don't think it's going to happen, but he was always rumored as Shazam or whatever in the DC universe. But,
maybe.
But you know, I
no,
don't
know.
No,
he wasn't Shazam. He was Black Adam.
Black Adam, yeah. You know, and who's to say later on down the line that we don't see him in a Marvel movie? I wouldn't count it against it.
I'd like
you know?
To see him in a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
I'm a little biased because right now I like Marvel movie over DC, but and not necessarily just a steal from DC. But I don't think it's a problem because I think they'll maybe make this Black Adam thing. Maybe I don't know, but yeah, I hope DC makes better movies. With that said, real quick, man, this is the first time I saw the newest Suicide Squad trailer in the theater here today. Man, this movie. You know, I know I poo-pooed on BVS and Man of Steel, and I'm sorry, I just don't like them. This Suicide Squad looked good. This Suicide Squad makes me happy. Really does. So I'm hoping, crossing fingers, that everything works out for that. Anyway.
Well, whether you're a fan of David Ayers or not, the guy pretty much is a storyteller first. And then a filmmaker next. Now, like I said, now he's balanced it out a lot better. But, I mean, come on. The guy wrote Training Day, which I thought was an excellent movie.
Oh, yeah.
And like I said, Fury, for anybody that wants a small war film, I definitely recommend Fury. It was one of the surprises. I think last year I saw it, but it was one of the surprises last year.
I still have yet to see it. But
very, very
that
good.
That is on my list. 100%.
Very good characters.
I hear that old Mr. LaBeouf, and that goes to show.
LaBeouf's
that,
great.
That goes to show. Don't judge somebody because of certain movies. I know, you know, Indiana Jones and the Transformer movies, and sometimes that can be the proof positive on a certain actor. But give them a chance, because maybe it's the material. And yeah, because I've heard nothing but great things.
And one, you know, the thing is, you don't have to like the guy. I mean, the guy seems like he's a douche or whatever. He does all these crazy antics, but it's just like Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise did a lot of crazy stuff or whatever. He's toned it down a lot. But the guy can act. The guy can get you involved in a movie.
Well, that was until he blew up, though.
Huh?
That was until he blew up.
What movie was that?
It wasn't a movie. It's Preacher.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll get to that later. Okay, that's right. we'll get to that later. All right. So let's see. Here we go. Here's one that's close to home for me, and I'm curious to see how this is gonna be. Anyways, like it was mentioned earlier, a certain horror franchise, horror icon, is going to be coming back to the silver screen. They're expecting 2017. Now, no, we're not talking about Jason Voorhees, although that's in the works as well. We are talking about Michael Myers.
Is it really? Jason, are they still trying to
They've got a script pretty much now that they said they're confident.
Is it a reboot? I feel it's going to be a reboot again.
The Friday 13th?
Yeah.
They haven't said it's a reboot. I know it's not found footage anymore. They were going to do found footage, but then they decided to shit can that and go for some other idea. And it's funny, the guy that's writing Friday the 13th wrote like some kind of indie film that won awards because the producer said, well, we definitely got a writer that's way above qualifications for a Friday the 13th movie.
Well, hey, look, you always bring in talent. It's never a bad day when you bring in talent.
So, anyways, to join Mr. Voorhees on the big screen in 2017, you're going to get Michael Myers. That they haven't really disclosed any kind of plot. They've just kind of already started this. But here's the big thing about it is, for those of you that thought, screw Rob Zombie and his take on Halloween or whatever, Carpenter's the master. Well, Carpenter is returning. He's going to be the executive producer on this first Halloween film.
This is a reboot, though, right?
Huh?
This is going to be a reboot?
This is something that they haven't been... it could either be a reboot or it could be... What was it? Let's see. Carpenter had his hands on 1, 2, and 3, so it could be... That this may be the sequel to the second one, like another sequel. I don't know. My guess is probably it's a reboot.
So they really haven't said anything.
They haven't said. They said that he is returning to the series as executive producer, and he's teaming with Blumhouse. And that's another name that you hear almost every week. But Blumhouse is being yet another horror franchise, and so them teaming with Carpenter. You know, like I said, Blumhouse. I'm half and half. I know you. You're not as big a fan of Blumhouse. My thing is, what I told you is, I said, all right, Blumhouse does these small things, but come on, give me some heavy hitters or whatever, and this is exactly what I'm looking for. And I'm not looking for a Halloween movie done on a $2 million budget either. You know, I want to... But then again, you can make the argument that the first Halloween would only cost, you know, however much.
I think you should find a good happy medium. I don't think it should be real big, but I don't think they're going to give a lot of money, like real, make it real big. But also think that you should keep it low, because that's what's going to bring the spirit back. That's what's going to bring that horror back, is to kind of have your hands tied a little bit and have to be creative about it and be spooky about it and be kind of scary about it. The Blumhouse thing, I just really haven't been that impressed. But lately, all they've done is these ghost things, so I don't even really know if it's really them. It's just that they're going after what's popular now, and I just don't like these ghost movies. I don't like that kind of stuff. But I am really happy. I read this as well. Saw the that he's exec producing it. He's really getting behind it because he's, I guess, kind of tired of seeing it.
Well,
run into the ground.
And here's another thing: is very simple score to Halloween, but Carpenter's clause as far as like coming back and doing this also is he wanted to do the score.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Wow!
Because I don't know if you noticed, but Carpenter here recently has, and I love talking about vinyl because I'm getting into vinyl now.
What you're talking about? Yes.
Is Carpenter has remastered his scores to all of his films and put them on vinyl, and he's added like extra tracks or whatever, like he's from his basement or whatever. He's added more musical tracks to it if he had a shot or whatever, he would put them in the movies or whatever. But I think it's awesome. Like I said, he does very simple scores, but I'm not gonna lie. I mean, Halloween's iconic. For me, Escape from New York, whenever that comes on, I can, like, 75% of the movies are scores that he's done. You play it about a minute or so, and I can recognize what movie it is, so mm-hmm. they stick with me. As simple as they are.
Yeah, it's just it's just cool to me because if you know me, my horror icon of choice was always Michael Myers, and my excuse was because he's not dead, and he's not a mongoloid. You know, he's not a sleep demon, he's not a mongoloid. I mean, he's a real man, at least at first. And that was always scarier to me. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, out of all of them, was probably the scariest because they're about real people, based off of real events, but real people that can really do it. Because to me, the scariest thing are human beings, what human beings are capable of doing. And even if, and if also looking at inside that, how can a human being do some of the things that the Hewitt family did in Texas? How can someone be that depraved and macabre and stuff like that? So to have a human being, you know, kind of killing people, I always kind of liked. Now, with that said, though, you know, Freddy Krueger is awesome. I was never a huge fan of Voorhees. I'm never a huge, huge fan. I know you and some other friends of mine are bigger Friday 13th kind of fans or what have you. That was my favorite Halloween. I mean, if I was to really, well, like I said, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is probably the best of those crazy, really of it all. But you know, Freddy Krueger, I mean, is probably the coolest icon.
Because
Robert Englund played it so well. The idea of it was so well, and it was done so well. And I mean, he got it from an article. Some Japanese kid which said that he was afraid to go to sleep. Because if he did, he would die. He knew he would die, and he like kept coffee pots and stuff in his closet. And of course, his parents found out and said, "This is all just dreams. There's no big deal." And then they actually slipped some kind of a pill in him in his food. He fell asleep and died the next day. I mean, how crazy is that? Anyway, Wes Craven read this article, and that's what he thought. Well, man, this is insane. I don't know. This doesn't make sense. But what if? And then of course, there's where Freddy Krueger came. But nonetheless, I mean, as far as the coolest. Yeah, it's probably him. But I always liked how Michael Myers was just a man, just a crazy man. And then of course, and then they got crazy with it down the line. But of course, I still followed it because I was already a fan. But yeah, they got crazy with it, just like everything else did. So it's
funny when I think about these horror icons and their franchises. I always have to.
Oh well, I'm sorry. Real quick, the coolest. Is Pinhead really?
I was gonna say he's.
But you know
the as far as like the overall
like offbeat, I love the Hellraiser.
The overall like franchises, I gotta say that overall Friday 13th is probably the weakest out of all of them. Because I mean they're all the same, you know, campers getting killed, pretty much. And
well, it's funny they knew there wasn't a lot of substance, but yeah. but they played at that, so that's, you know, that's kind of cool.
But again, they're fun. Yeah, I'm sorry, the majority of them are fun. The, you know, with the exception of like even Ghost Manhattan. I'm half and half. I mean, I don't like it either. But there's still some stuff that I'm like, this is off the wall. Just
yeah,
like.
I mean,
but they definitely they already jumped the shark before that. But
I will say, if you're going to compare it with Goes to Hell, it's
right. Or even 10, because like 10, Jason 10 was like,
because 10 was meant to just promote,
yeah,
Freddy versus Jason, because we're like, in a year we're going to have this other movie, and we just want to make sure people remember who Jason Voorhees is. That's in my opinion. That's what they've done. And it was complete satire. That's what that movie was. So I don't really blame it. Jason Goes to Hell was trying to be a real movie.
Yeah.
And it was dog shit.
But I think I would put Halloween second to Hellraiser as far as like the overall franchise. Because I think overall, compared to Nightmare on Elm Street, I think Halloween 1 is great. Halloween 2 is good. Halloween 4 even, or Halloween 3 has nothing to do with Michael Myers, but I'm sorry, I went back and I watched that again. If it wasn't for that fact, though, that is a great, we talked about Cloverfield Lane.
That movie.
Like back in the 80s or whatever, that was a great kind of Twilight Zone episode, that movie, Halloween 3.
That movie scared me as a young person.
Yeah.
More than any of the other Halloweens did, because when that kid's head squished and bugs came out and whatever, yeah. And the mask, I mean, it freaked the shit out of me. Now, though, let's just be clear, though, as far as that. I didn't know about Hellraiser. I didn't know about Hellraiser until a little later in life. So, when I mean like as like I liked Michael Myers was my icon of choice when I was younger, and whilst I was watching the three. Now that's the I guess the holy trinity of those is like Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, and Jason Voorhees. And then later on, me and some cousins went and took a chance on this crazy goddamn box. It said Hellraiser on it with his, and he has some guts to put a pinhead right there on the front, holding that box like that on that VHS tape. Yeah. And you're like, you're either gonna there's only two outcomes. You're gonna scare the shit out of somebody. Nobody's gonna touch it, or somebody's gonna come in.
Well, and basically, anybody that's a hardcore Christian or whatever, I guarantee they didn't get it because they're not on that. The tagline was he'll tear your soul apart.
But absolutely, Pinhead is the first two movies. Yeah.
If you look at it, because Hellraiser's a little bit different. Like it's hard to compare it with Halloween because Halloween, Freddy Krueger, and all those like their whole franchise, all of it came out in theaters. There wasn't anything direct to video. Hellraiser after the fourth one, they plucked it to these direct to video releases. That yes, you ignore if you're a true fan, but they're still there. So it's like. Whenever I talk about Hellraiser and why I say to me it's the best franchise, 3 is the weakest one. I'm not a big fan of 3.
I don't like that.
1 is great. 2 is the best horror sequel possibly ever to me. If I thought about it extensively, I might find. But right now, off the top of my head, especially with these franchises that we're talking about, the second one in the Hellraiser series, I'm sorry, it beats all the rest of them.
It's one of those things like Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 and things. It's really a continuation. It's technically a sequel, but it's literally a carry-on. So, yes, yeah. I agree, but then you can go into semantics about is it really. I mean, but the great thing is it's the final act. It's like part one there was, and then there's this companion piece right next to it. Which has this one big over arc story, which is awesome. Which is why I'm so disappointed in the third. I was disappointed in the third because
it just became kind of like a monster.
The way
it
ended when it came up, when the statue came up or whatever, and now he's trapped in there. Like, all right, and then we'll get to the third one. I wanted to see that, and they did it, but it wasn't.
It was too generic. Like that was the thing. Was like about Pinhead. It wasn't like all these characters really. You probably see Jason Voorhees the most, I think, out of all of these, like in the movies. Yeah. But definitely Pinhead you saw the least, and in the third one, like it was too much Pinhead.
I always used to say that part three made him one of these icons, quote unquote, where he really wasn't. He was kind of the bastard child who's on the outskirts of it. He was like for these sicko people. Like if maybe you had some friends who were like, ooh, you watch that, like because that might be a little over the edge, and then 3 came along and kind of made it one of those horror icons, in my opinion, kind of.
And the thing is, if you hadn't seen the Hellraiser movies and you're like, okay, I'll give them a try since we recommend them everything. Here's the deal is, horror buffs, this is where I disagree with a lot of horror buffs. A lot of horror buffs will say, well, skip 4, too. I disagree completely. I think 4, honestly, out of the 4, it's probably my favorite story, actually.
I would probably say the same.
Yeah, he would say the same too because he took his name off of it. But part 4 honestly is probably my favorite story out of the 4 because it's not necessarily about Pinhead at all. It's about the box. Yeah. It's like a history lesson.
Well, it's a natural progression too, don't you think?
Yeah.
What next is about this key that opens the door between heaven and hell.
Yeah, I mean, you get the story
of
the
balls and phantasm.
You get the story of the box, and from what I remember, the main character is the guy that created the box, right?
Yeah, the toy maker.
Yeah, so you get the past, the present, and the future. It's basically break it down. That's how they break down the three acts.
The
and I thought it's
the ending was disappointing, but
But anyways,
what can you do?
So. And then the only other bit of news is new trailer broke. The second trailer for Star Trek Beyond broke. And all I'm going to say is I loved it. It's awesome. I can't wait. but I'm going to send it over here to Chris because I know he's got more of a detailed reaction.
Well, the only thing I really want to say is, I mean, because that first trailer was just so bad. I mean, they tried to cash in on the Guardians of the Galaxy kind of thing, which was uncalled for. Because, listen, whether you like it or not, all Star Trek fans out there, whether it be the new one, Next Generation, Classic, whatever it is, they've never been rock and roll. And that's okay. I mean, that's okay. It's never been a series like, you know, Star Wars was rock and roll. And this was, as I've heard people describe it as, Star Wars was rock and roll, this was, and Star Trek was classical music. So to kind of pander at audiences, just to blatantly try to get some people in by playing that Beastie Boy. Now listen, they played that Beastie Boy song on the first 2009 remake. And that's cool, because like I was telling you, what it does is it grounds audience members that aren't fans of Star Trek and says, oh, I like that song. Hey, this is a movie I understand. This is a movie I can be comfortable with. Yeah, that's Beastie Boys. Okay. And even bringing it back in the movie, which sounds like what they're going to do, is fine. But to try to promote it with that, just, and then certainly clearly in the vein of what Guardians was doing, even a couple years before, which is kind of silly. It's like, well, maybe enough time's passed, we can do it now. But it was just kind of insulting to people that do like Star Trek, whether you like the new ones or not. But to this point, this new trailer is exactly what they should have done in the first place. This is what they should have done from the beginning. This was, it felt like Star Trek. I mean, the whole thing about Simon Pegg was, he was saying, because he co-wrote this one, he was saying that they were trying to make it more of a Star Trek story. Oh, Robert Kurtzman, or which was Alex, Robert Kurtzman or Orsi? Anyway, I think it was Kurtzman. Kurtzman, yeah, which is one of the two writers of the previous two, wanted to come in and write and direct this new one before Justin Lin came on. And he was, out of the two, he was the biggest Trekker. He was the biggest Trek fan. And apparently his script was, quote-unquote, to Star Trek. I don't know how that makes any sense, first off. I mean, if you make a Knight Rider movie, and they say, I'm sorry, we can't use this script because it's too Knight Rider-y.
can you take the car out?
I don't get this talking car. What is this about? Anyway, so they fired the guy, both positions, writer and director, but still apparently the idea was to kind of still keep it Star Trek, more Star Trek-centric, more original kind of classic Star Trek-centric about story, characters, and events, scenarios, versus more of the action, which is what J.J. kind of did with the first two. But that's what it's kind of showed. Now, listen, Justin Lin directed this thing. He's the guy that, you know, directed the... He brought the Fast and the Furious that we just talked about out of the cellar and into the limelight, really. So kudos to him. I think he's a very good director. And this is his next challenge, as he took this. So, yes, there's certainly going to be action to it. But the script that they wrote or whatever was apparently, like I said, looks like... I mean, you clearly see it from the trailer that... The Enterprise is going to explode, so we're not going to get much of that, which is kind of disappointing me. I do like that, the ship battle stuff. And then they're going to be stuck on this planet, and they're going to have to resurrect or cause an insurrection of this rebellious tribes, two sides, or whatever it is. I don't really know. But anyway, the point is that, like you said, I really loved it as well. It's now gotten me... I was going to see it anyway, okay? Let's be serious here. But I'm now excited to see it. And it just goes to show that the tone of a trailer and the way you do it, you shouldn't judge a movie. If you wanted to see it to begin with, even if this trailer was bad, normally, I know that's the way I treat it, I would go see it anyway. But what making the difference between a bad trailer and a good trailer and the tone of one and the other really can hurt the perception of it and potentially lose audiences. And I think it's a great example of the first trailer really being off track and this one getting right back on track. And I don't know, it looks fun to me. And I don't know about anybody else out there if they even... it looks to me like there's a ship they show at the end of it. They show it twice, but it shows it at the end of it. It looks like the NX-01. And I don't know how that can be. And I know it's not. It can't be. But it looks like it to me. And if you don't know what the NX-01 is, it's the Enterprise that Scott Bakula was in on Enterprise. And first off, it can't be because it's not even the same continuity. But man, every time I see that, like I say, is that the NX-01?
See, I keep thinking too, if they're, because, you know, a lot of people are saying, and JJ was infamous for episode 7 about this as well, but a lot of people are saying, well, here we go, here's Search for Spock. basically. Same kind of thing. Enterprise blows up. They're on a planet. They got to fight this alien race. Da, da, da. And if that's the case, if that is the route that they're going, we're like, we're going to do an alternate, you know, search for... Well, I don't see how it's an alternate search for Spock completely, though, because Spock's still alive. But but the thing is speaking about the ship you're talking about at the end, I was like, well, is that the equivalent to, like, the Klingon bird of prey that they steal to get back home and everything? Yeah. Like, is that
see, it still looks like... Yeah, it could be, but...
Is that Idris Elba's ship?
It's got nacelles and so forth.
Yeah. I don't know,
man. It looks pretty cool to me. I'm now definitely ready for it. And, you know, bringing on Star Trek Beyond. So, we'll hopefully that won't disappoint. And, like I said, I know there's fans out there that don't like any of the new reboot stuff. But I enjoy them. I think the cast is good as well.
So, should we explain about this Tom Cruise exploding thing to people now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about Preacher real quick. Preacher just aired on AMC the other day. And it's the first episode of this hopefully successful series. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it is fantastic. I don't know if you guys read the comics, Garth Ennis's comic. It's fantastic. I mean, I got him on it. I'm on, and I know some of you comic gurus out there are probably like, well, no shit, buddy. So, but I've been reading the trades. I'm up to book 4 now. And I love it. I love this hostile, crazy world that Garth has created. If you're religious or if you take religion very, very, very seriously, this is not something for you. Very sacrilegious, if I may say. I don't know if someone really, you know, feels inclined to go that far. I mean, guys, this is a comic. And that's all it is a comic. But, man, it is awesome. It's fun. It's deranged. Like I said, it reminds me of, like, Detroit from RoboCop. And
it's
like,
the southern version of Detroit, yeah, from RoboCop.
Yeah, and, like, in The Crow, that shitty city they were living in, and, you know, in The Crow and all that bad stuff. But it is awesome. Anyway, this is the first episode, episode 1 of their AMC series. I really enjoyed it a lot. I mean, they made some changes, like on some casts. Like Tulip is an African American lady now. She was on S.H.I.E.L.D. I forgot what her name is. And the guy who played Cassidy is spot on. And I think actually the what's his face? And
Dominic Cooper.
He played Howard Stark, the young Howard Stark, in like Captain America and all that. I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it a lot. And I know there's going to be more to come. I read some articles about it. And he said, "Listen, guys, it's going to be crazy." But if anybody that has read the comics knows, just a little disclaimer, because I was reading an article where he said that this first season is basically going to be a prequel up to that first comic. So if you guys are fans are watching it and you're kind of going, well, this isn't making sense. And of course they made some changes, liberties to kind of make it a little more digestible to for video, for a video audience, for watching it. One of the main producers outside of Seth, by the way, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg have produced this thing, oddly enough, and created it. But this third producer was saying, listen, guys, this thing is going to get crazy, just like the comics. And if they get a chance to make the second season, that's where they're going to start going from where the comic starts. And that is the stuff that I'm looking for. I want it to succeed. I want to see this crazy. I want to see how far they can go with the crazy shit that goes on in this comic book on television. And I know they can't do it all, but I want to see how far they can go with it. So what did you think? Like I said, I really enjoyed it. I don't want to give it a score. I loved it. I thought it was fun. I know you were worried about Tulip. I liked her because I agree with that. I didn't think she was that great. She was the porcupine lady in S.H.I.E.L.D. if you guys watched that. I thought she was fine. I liked everybody. It was. I enjoyed it. What did you think?
I think, look, here's the deal is for anybody who watches a lot of TV, usually the pilots suck for most shows. I'll just say that. They're usually one of the weakest episodes. Not including Firefly. That's one that I think the pilot's great. This pilot is probably one of the best I've seen. Now, I'm not as far as Chris on the comics. I've only done the first trade paperback, first 12 issues of Preacher. That's what it is. But what's interesting, though, is when I was watching it, you were saying how it was a prequel to the comic book. and you know, and how it's going to lead up into that. But what I like is how, yes, it's a prequel, but yet the stuff, some of the stuff that's happened in the comic book is happening there. So it's not like they're like, all right, we just made up this backstory, whatever, and then we'll go into the Preacher comic. That's not the way it's working. It's like there's for example, Jesse's dad. There's a couple scenes with Jesse's dad in this pilot. And now that I finished book one and I know more about Jesse's dad, I was like, oh, okay. I was like, that is actually, you know, in the comic and everything. It's a plot point. Like I said, in the comic, it starts off pretty much with no origin. So that is what the pilot's kind of done. It shows you how Jesse now has his power and everything. I'm still skeptical on even them saying it's going to get crazy, that it's going to get as crazy as the comic book. If it does, kudos to AMC, because you talk about risk. After I got done reading this...
Well, you already
know
that there are certain things they're not going to do by language itself. There's certain things, yeah. Now, I'm not talking about curse words.
But there's certain actions and plot points, especially when you get to know Jesse's family in the comic. That's the stuff that I'm like, I don't know.
How much of that did they get into without giving spoilers in book one? I can't remember. Like I said, I'm on four, so I can't remember. You're talking about the family, like the grandmother and so forth.
Book one, like his whole ordeal with his family is solved.
So did they have...
It's solved, like his whole ordeal with his family. Okay, like so... the book one ends with... where are they going? Basically, he gets reunited with Tulip.
Uh-huh.
So to say, because something happens, whatever. But he gets reunited with Tulip, and that's how book one ends. But no, like the his conflict with the family is resolved by the end of book one.
Yeah.
But I mean, even before then, like there's characters, there's a character like Arseface, for example, that's in the comic. And to me, I do like the look in the comic better. But man, there is a scene in this pilot with Arseface. And it's funny, other people that reviewed the Preacher show said the same thing, that you look at the guy, and at first, and I did too, I chuckled, but in this scene, because it's kind of a dramatic scene or whatever, I felt bad for this. Like, I was like, man, I actually like this character, and I got feelings for this dude.
Well, I mean,
whatever.
You,
and
you kind of feel bad for him in the comic, too, because they set up that
yeah,
he's nobody gives a shit about him.
Right.
And the whole deal is that he... Well, should we tell why? Because they didn't say in the
pilot. No, they didn't say in the pilot.
So, I mean, should we even reveal why he looks
well,
like
that? Well, we won't reveal why, but we'll just say, this might get you to be like, well, I got to watch this, but his face looks like an asshole.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's basically...
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't born that way, is all I'll say, is he wasn't born with an ass face.
No, they might have revealed that in the pilot, though, I think.
I can't remember if they said it or not. Anyway.
Anyways.
I don't know if they're... I know they're not going to go as far as the comic goes, because first off, they're just not.
I'm just curious to see how far. How far.
Well,
they
that's
go
what
with.
I was
yeah.
saying. Like, I wanted to continue on to see how far they can do. How far, you know, how far across that line are they going to go? So, please watch AMC. Now, it comes back on June 3rd or something like that. So they skip this week and they'll be back on next week or vice versa. I don't know. It's a phone somewhere. But
and just because I've watched the pilot twice and I watched it over here with you, and then like 2 days later I watched it again. I'll just say this too is like, well, another thing that's very, very surprising about this is the fact that Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, both, if you don't know who Evan Goldberg is, he was behind Superbad, and he works with
they're,
Rogen.
They're like
high school friends. Yeah, comedic team, basically.
I mean, they've been friends since, like, middle school.
And they're the ones that have produced this, whatever. So the whole Tom Cruise exploding everything, I think, is their little touch.
Oh, that's what we forgot. Right.
So the Tom Cruise exploding is basically, it's a newscast kind of thing.
this is the premise of the show.
The premise is there's an entity called Genesis that's trying to find a host, basically. And I'll just leave it at that. It's a holy entity trying to find a host. And it goes, you see, it goes through one host, but whenever it goes bad, the person pretty much...
If it's
explodes.
Not worthy, like if it's not the one.
So it goes,
just
right.
leaving, they explode.
So you see in the background, there's a newscast of a church, and you can only assume it's a Scientology church.
Yeah, yeah.
where it says, yes, breaking news, Tom Cruise has exploded.
Tom Cruise was giving a speech and suddenly exploded. Exploded.
So
a mist of red.
You put two and two together, and you figure, well, the entity tried to go into Tom Cruise,
right? And he wasn't worthy.
Yeah,
so, you know, and once again, this is still the premise. It gets to Jesse. That's the premise of the show. So it's not a
Jesse doesn't blow up.
It's Jesse is the one that it's the host.
Yeah.
that he finds. I mean, that's. You know what it is, so.
But anyways, going back to the surprising thing is like that stuff. It doesn't surprise me that was in there because it's Rogan and yeah. Goldberg. But going back and watching, a lot of critics too said this as well is how well this pilot was directed by these guys, that was the biggest surprise. That I was like, this is probably one of the best looking directed pilots I've seen in a long time.
You know,
so.
and they've been directing for. I mean, they directed that. I always forget that latest Christmas comedy they did. They directed that.
Oh, they directed Night Before?
Yeah, I believe so.
I didn't know that.
And they directed The World's End or whatever as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this
See,
is...
I had no idea
yeah,
that they
their
directed
first rodeo. Yeah, they've been doing it for a bit now. So they've got something under their belt. But yeah, listen, guys. Mark that sucker on your DVR or whatever it is and try to support some Preacher because it's... If this sounds good to you, because it is certainly not for everybody, I hope it's for a lot of people so we can continue to have it. But if you're a little sensitive, it might because listen, it comes on like 10 o'clock, unless they change. It came on 10 o'clock on AMC, so it's an hour show, so 10 to 11. So I mean, listen, there's violence, there's no nudity, violence, language, stuff like that.
Like we mentioned before, if you like movies like RoboCop and The Crow, where it's not all, you know, roses and sunshine in this world. It's a dark world, but then you've got a hero that the catalyst that you know is going to start taking these bad people out and everything. Then this is the kind of show for you.
All right. Well, staying on the trend of comic books and more so trade paperbacks, just want to go through a couple things I have been really wanting to talk about for a while now, almost since we started this podcast. And there's a couple of them I've had that for a while now, but I want to start on one of them really quickly about that I just picked up this past a week ago, something like that, maybe two. It's called, and by the way, everything I'm going to mention here are independent comics. And this is what I was saying earlier, mainly because look, Marvel is owned by Disney now, so I don't know if that's the case or not. But I mean, they've been reissuing like Civil War and stuff, which I didn't read, as they came out and what have you. So I'm sure I'd like to pick up, you know, a Civil War trade paperback, Civil War or whatever from Marvel's version, whatever. We got a trade paperback that's maybe 3/4 inch thick, and it's $25. Are you kidding me? I mean, really? So anyway, so I go down the line. I'm looking at my local store. And then I go and I see some interesting covers that are clearly not a Marvel or DC or... actually, this is Image. But some of the major kind of stuff. Even some of the Images comics are a little expensive. Anyways, and I find some that looks interesting. And it's more interesting to me, to be honest with you guys. When I look at it, I look at a title. I'm like, I don't know what that is. I flip it over, read the back. It seems interesting. And it says $9.99 on it. I'll take that every day, and I'll support this independent series every day on the same size paperback, trade paperback, or maybe even bigger. Yes, I'll give you $10 versus $25 for the same size just because it's Civil War or just because it's Deadpool.
It's name brand.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is fucking nuts. Anyway, sorry. But anyway, one of the ones I just picked up a week or so, whatever, is called I Hate Fairyland, okay? And it's by, apparently the creator is, I guess, Scotty Young, S-K-O-T-T-I-E Young. And actually, on the front here, Neil Gaiman has a quote that says, a candy-colored and vicious delight, and always dangerously funny. What this is, if I can describe it, is... It's very, very cartoon drawn, very, very colorful, very bright, very whimsical. But the spin is that it's very violent and very unorthodox. And I'll give you a brief breakdown of it. It's kind of like Wizard of Oz and like Labyrinth or whatever. If you ever watched those movies and you thought, well, you know, yes, you know, Dorothy wanted to get home. Of course, she got, you know, she got whisked to Oz, but wanted to get home. And then there's these wonderful people come and they help her on her way. And she goes and she delightfully goes and does it. And there's some scares and there's, you know, whatever. There's the witch and all this kind of stuff like that. But she goes about it and happily, and then she wins her way. And, you know, and let's say like Labyrinth, you know, there she is. She's there. Yes, she doesn't necessarily want to be in the Labyrinth, but she's there to get her little brother back and all this kind of stuff like that. But she meets fun characters and stuff like that. And then the day ends, and then she's made new friends and dance magic dance. This is a similar situation where there's a little 9-year-old girl named Gertrude with green fluffy locks in her hair. And she gets whisked away in a hole in her floor that leads to a place called Fairyland. And as she falls to seemingly her doom, she scares the shit out of her. And she lands into Fairyland. And just like in Wizard of Oz, in the middle of the Yellow Brick Road area, she's met by all these wonderful people and fairy godmothers and creatures. And they're like, you know, it's the typical, you know, welcome to Fairyland and blah, 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 and rose buttons and all this kind of stuff like that. And here's a companion. They got a little Jiminy Cricket kind of companion. He's like, this is your... And she's just like, hey, look. I was like, anything you wish, you can have. And she's like, well, how about... Can I just go home? That's what I'd like to do. I'm scared shitless. I fell endlessly and landed on the ground. And surprisingly, I'm not dead, but I'm busted. And I just like to go home. They're like, well, that's fine. Everything, of course you can go home. But you must find a key. And here's your companion. You got a little Jiminy Cricket guy. And he's like, here's your companion. And all you must do is find the key. You find the key, and then you get to go back home. And it's, you know, it's a day's journey. Well, the next panel is 27 years later. It's like 27 years later. And she is so disgruntled. Now, the key is that I should mention is that she still stays in a 9-year-old body, but she's 27 years old in mind. So she's had enough of Fairyland, and that's pretty. And she and dude, and his name is Larry, the little dude. They're just back and forth like an old couple. Like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, I think they're like rowing down some kind of candy cane lane thing in a boat. And she's like, I thought you said we were supposed to be here. And he's like, I told you. You know, back in, you know, a gumdrop forest that we did whatever. No, you didn't say. And it's fantastic. I don't know how to. It is funny. It is brilliant. It is satire. It is fantastic. I showed you this book, Ken, when because I had to show it to you. It's such a wonderfully clever book. I mean, stuff like, you know, there's a narrator, like you would, like if it began as a cartoon. He's like, where we left off, Gertrude was going down the blah, 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 you know, gumdrop lane and so forth. And she goes, you know, I can hear you up there. Would you shut the... And it's funny, they won't curse. They curse, but it's like the world won't allow it to say fuck. So it says, will you shut the you know, furry up? And then, you know, and then she gets angry and shoots it out of the sky. He blows the moon's face off or whatever it is that's doing the narrative. It's so vulgar in a cute way. And I love it. It is fantastic. And then it goes on and on. There's a lot more that goes on. She's trying to find this key because she just wants to get out of there. The queen of the land hates her guts. So she's trying to get her killed. And it's so fantastic. I recommend it. I'll say to you, I hate Fairyland. If you can find it anywhere, if you know about it, awesome too. It's a great comic book. It really is so fun. I laughed out loud many times. I would give anything if they made a little animated movie, or if they made a Animated show or something. I'll take this. I'll take the comics each any day. As a matter of fact, I'm fiending for volume two, and I'm sure they've got it in comics somewhere. They just haven't made a trade yet. But God, it's fantastic.
Is it still going? Like, is the
yeah? Because this is volume one. So it's volume.
No, I'm saying like is it so it it's recent. It's current. Like it's
yeah. It just came
you can
out.
Got, get the newest issue.
Yeah. It just, okay. This trade just came out like a week ago. So it's kind of a bummer because it'll probably be another couple months before.
Okay, so the series show hadn't ended yeah. yet.
Like
okay.
I said, there's probably individual comics of it coming still right. out. You know, what okay. I mean, they've got to you know collect it all up. Yeah, it's a fantastic series. Kind of on the same vein. Anything you wanted to add to that? I don't know if you have anything to add to any of this.
It's funny because you. You admit I forgot I was looking at something in there, and I just laughed at like an image that was in there. But the thing that I don't think you explained there that got me that because I was like, wait a minute. So the next panel, she's 27, was the fact that a year in their time was 27 years in our time, right. and I was like, so when I was like, well, I just kind of pictured in my mind. It's like, all right, well, the next day. Like you said, having a 27-year-old being like, what the hell is going on?
Oh, it's funny. You know, she goes to these little bars, and she drinks and whatever, but it's so weird. She tries to hit on other male characters of the like, a frog or whatever, and all that stuff like that. And they're like, run away, and she's like, what's the deal with that? And like Larry's like, maybe because you look nine? She's like, ah, shit. I hate this place so much. She hates it so much. But anyway, I hate Fairyland. Please, if you can find it, great support, Mr. Scotty Young. It's awesome. Here's another one, just real quick. That it's kind of in the same kind of vein. It's called Kaptara, and that's Kaptara. This is volume one, also of a trade paperback, and it's looks like Chip Zdarsky and Kagan McLeod are the two involved in this. I don't know who's the artist and who is the other. Doesn't say. But this is a really this is kind of like a Monty Python esque like it's about a team of space explorers that's kind of like modern day space explorers or whatever, and they have their ship gets shipwrecked or whatever, they land on a planet and there's only one survivor left, and he's gay. I don't know what that made, but he is. He's the character's gay, and when he gets to the planet, it's almost like He-Man. It's this weird kind of crazy, weird, surreal He-Man world. I mean, it's clearly that was an influence. There's a guy named what was his name? I can't remember what his name is, but they're very similar, and it's got crazy, weird beasts that they ride on and so forth, and they're trying to get him back home, and he doesn't really want to go home, but there's this one big dark baddie that's going to kill Earth, and he doesn't really care, but they're like, well, come on, you know, we gotta, you know, you don't care about your Earth and all this kind of stuff. This was kind of weird to describe. Let me see what it said. Let me just read the back real quick, but it says, when an exploratory mission goes horribly wrong, scientist Keith Kanga crash lands on Kaptara, a strange planet filled with muscle-bound warriors and cat tanks. With the help of a crew that includes a feline hunter, a nude wizard, and a wisdom-spouting orb, Keith must find the rest of his crew and a way back to Earth before it's too late. Now, it's funny, they said the rest of his crew. I know some of them kind of die right there in there, so I don't know who's left or what have you, but I've read about three. I ain't got much left of this, but it's really, really clever as well. Like I said, it's got almost like a Monty Python kind of humor. It's the art is really, really surreal and fun to watch. It's very colorful as well. Like I said, I mean, if you read this thing, it's definitely got some like 80s cartoon like He-Man kind of influences to it. Really, really, really good one, I think, as well. So if anybody out there is looking around, Kaptara, Kaptara is another trade paperback that I certainly recommend. I only got two more here real quick, and one of them I haven't read. This one, the next one here is one I have read. It's called Paper Girls, which is another one. Looks like it's another colorful one. It's more pastel kind of like. It's a little more dull as far as that. But really good art in it, really stylized art. And it's kind of like, this is kind of like an 80s movie, almost kind of like Stand By Me and the Goonies and stuff. But it's all girls. They're a paper, it's called, or they're called paper girls. They're a paper route. They have a paper route. And there's one girl that's kind of the new girl. And the rest of them are kind of like a gang of little girls that were on this route and what have you. And strange things start happening. You see these kind of weird, crazy people. And they don't know what's going on. And it's kind of... trying not to give anything away. There's a little bit like time travel that's involved and things of that nature. They find this pod that's crazy. Maybe I'll just read it as well. And by the way, FYI, guys, there's a series I really, really love right now called Saga, which is written by this guy as well. And he's also written Why the Last Man, and he also wrote
Fables.
And Fables. And he's on, we talked about him recently on one of the podcasts. He's on this Hasbro writing room, which is awesome. But this is from Brian K. Vaughan. Like I said, it says here on the back here, he's a New York Times bestselling writer of Saga and Cliff Chang. I don't know what that is. I'd like to get that. Legendary art. Oh, that's his name and the artist. And Cliff Chang, the legendary artist of Wonder Woman, comes the first volume of an all-new ongoing adventure. And I'll just read a little bit on the back here. In the early hours of Halloween in 1988, four 12-year-old newspaper delivery girls uncover the most important story of all time. Suburban drama and supernatural mysteries collide in this smash hit series about nostalgia, first jobs, and the last days of childhood. And it's really I don't really want to say anything else because it's really an interesting kind of read, because it's just it really is in the vein of those. Like I said, it's set in the 80s of these Stand By Me, Goonies, Explorers kind of thing like that, because there's some crazy shit that starts to happen, like some kind of weird supernatural kind of stuff that starts to happen to these girls, and they're just fish out of water in the middle of it. They've kind of got themselves caught into the mix, and the way this ends makes me want to right now. Like, I mean, that's another one I'm like, I want it now. Really cool read. Brian K. Vaughan is an awesome writer. If you're a fan of his, you probably already own it. If not, just give it a shot, because it is pretty cool. And lastly, another great writer. I have not read one page of this yet, but I'm going to. And the reason I picked this up is mainly because of the writer, and that's Mark Millar, or Miller. Of course, from Kick-Ass and Wanted and a whole bunch of other stuff. The reason I picked this up is it's called Jupiter's Legacy. And it's another one that was $10. So I was like, okay, I'll definitely do that. Certainly from, and this is an Image comic as well, so that's pretty cool. Book one, and it's Mark Millar, so I'll take it. But it's basically about if superheroes had children, how do you live under the shadow of your parents? And that's as much as I know about it, but that was enough to get me going. I was like, that sounds pretty cool to me. Because and that's one of the cool things about Mark Millar to me that I've noticed is you'll take a scenario that's a superhero or a standard situation in comics and go, what if? Because, you know, come on, you got to really kind of have, you know, kind of an, you got to really think outside the box to go, okay, let's say Superman had a kid. You know, that's pretty hard to live up to. Superman. How do I live up to him? I might have all the same powers, but I'm not the same person. Maybe I like grunge music and this or whatever. And maybe I don't cast that same kind of image that he does. And he's always disappointed in me and this. And can I be a hero? I don't even want to be a hero. You know, I don't even care to do that. I have these powers, but I didn't ask for it. I was born with it. So I don't know if these are necessarily the themes, but that's what it sounded like to me. And I'm really looking forward to getting into this one here. But anyway, that's all about for this week. There's some others that, and of course, keep going on. We could do a Preacher if you were caught up. We can do the next volume each time because I love those. But also right now, I'm going to do some old stuff. I found Days of Future Past pretty cheap, and Frank Miller's Electra Saga, going through that kind of stuff right now as well. But as far as any kind of new stuff I want to do right now, that's it. So I hope you guys enjoyed that kind of little stuff, because once again, we wanted to kind of spice it up and do something different, since we did, it is kind of supposed to be a multi, category kind of faceted show here. So, but I've really been wanting to talk about this for a while, and certainly after reading this, I Hate Fairyland. So hope you enjoyed that. And like I said, we'll try to keep that kind of stuff going on, as the weeks go by. So, keep looking. Like I said, we're going to try to change this and kind of keep something like this as we go. So, that's that. Anyway, so, all right, I'm going to pass it over to you. We're going to do this spotlight, and I think what we're going to do, the way we're going to do it is this week will be Ken. Ken's going to do a little spotlight on something that's new to him, or something that he may have revisited, or something that he thinks maybe just might need to be, maybe an obscure movie that, you know, might need to be brought up. And then next week I'll do one for mine, and then we'll go back and forth as the weeks go by there. So anyways, I'm going to send it to you since you have one that I think maybe people will know, but what is your spotlight for this week?
Yeah, it was definitely not obscure, but it's something I knew I had to do because, like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, 4 years in film school, and I hadn't watched this trilogy, the Godfather trilogy, of course, what I'm talking about. And there's a lot of films that I got caught up on in film school, such as the Man with No Name trilogy I'd never seen until film school, Citizen Kane I'd never seen.
Man with No Name is good. I like that one.
Became a huge Hitchcock fan, North by Northwest. Rear Window I'd seen already. Vertigo I had not seen. But
you know what? And as I think about it right now as well, still trying to figure it out. I mean, this sounds like we might actually do a spotlight on maybe genre pictures as well at some point. Like, yeah, you're talking about Hitchcock, you're talking about noirs, like with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall and stuff like that, or action 80s movies or something like that. As we'll figure it out as we go along. But that might be something maybe to think about as well, as what we might do a spotlight on. A specific genre or
right.
specific something like that. But anyway, go ahead.
But, yeah. In the 4 years of film school, you know, I learned obviously a lot of things, basically how to do short films, how to correctly do a screenplay as far as like the format and everything goes, themes and issues and storytelling. But the biggest thing that I found out was, hey, there's older movies out there that kick ass as much as the newer movies I've been watching. My blockbuster generation, it was basically like the newest thing, the latest thing, and that's what I watched. And of course, you know, I had my horror genres and stuff, growing up as a kid, stuff that was nostalgic. But even saying that, I still had not watched the Godfather movies. And a close friend of mine, and later he would go on to direct some of my short films and everything, he touted about the Godfather series, and it's like, man, he's like, dude, you love character, you're a screenwriter, you love that. Well, how can you still not watch the Godfather movies? And my response was, I tried the first Godfather, and this was before film school. I tried 2-3 times and got about 30 minutes into it, I was bored. It just didn't hit me. All right, so of course I got kind of ridiculed for it and everything. But hey, again, you like what you like, you know. So, anyways, this last week, it's always just stood with me because I'm always the kind that says, all right, if you can't fairly critique a movie unless you've watched at least half of it or given it a good try. Not to go on a tangent, Gods of Egypt is god-awful. That's another movie that I watched here recently. But I gave it 3/4, and I just couldn't go anymore.
Unfortunately, I made it 10 minutes. I mean, I guess it's so, a theme to me, but the 10 minutes of this thing couldn't do it. Maybe I need to go back at it, just like San Andreas, maybe one day.
So fairly, I think fairly I can give a review for it if I wanted to right now, but I'm not going to do that because we're going to talk about a much better movie. At least, well, I'll go into it. The first Godfather I started with, and it's funny because I watched the first Godfather so many times, the first 30 minutes, it's like first 30 minutes, I knew scene by scene. Like, basically, I got to, and like I said, spoilers, but I'm sorry, if you hadn't seen the Godfather movies.
Come on. Yeah.
I mean, come on. But
well,
basically,
yeah, I mean, you hadn't, but, you know, spoilers.
But basically, I got to, because I always remembered the part, because visually, I was like, oh, this is cool, but I got to the producer with the horse's head in his bed. Mm. I was that's just nuts. This time around, though, focusing on it, and like I said, being in the right mindset, the fact that he basically, like I said, this is just one example. It doesn't even have to do with the main cast, but there was the plot point for that. It got me right off the bat was that he would not cast, and I can't remember who the singer was, but he would not cast the singer in a film because he had basically slept with the main actress who he wanted to bang. In so many words, and they said it more eloquently than what I just did. But, and basically Vito Corleone, Marlon Brando's character, the Godfather, sends Robert Duvall, who's his lawyer, out to basically say, look, do this for us, please, you know, whatever, we'll make it worth the while and everything. And he says, you can't. And I love it because I know this goes back to film school. They talked about Howard Hawks and all these people that were great directors, but they thought they were gods. Like, it was like the director back then was the producer.
Right.
And this guy in The Godfather was playing it perfect. So in that context, and now seeing the horse's head, and then after that, the singer that was close related to Vito ends up being the starring man after all of this.
His prize horse too. That's the deal.
Yeah, it was like, his prize horse. Yeah,
this horse. It was a prize horse. And he cut that thing's head off and put it
in his bed. Let alone not waking him up. He wakes up to it.
The
so,
scene is funny of them going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm talking about when they go. I mean, it's not funny that they did this, but it's like they had to go up there and do this job. Anyway.
But real briefly with the first Godfather, I'll say that I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. And actually, it's funny. I'm probably going to go and start racking up on Marlon Brando films, because after this film, because I remember this again, this is stupid, but I remember the first thing about The Godfather 2 back when I tried to watch it at Blockbuster, everything's like, I can't understand what Brando's saying. I can't, you know, I don't get it or whatever, but the thing is like, you have to focus on it, but it's not just like the whole story of Vito is funny, because you have like Gandolfini and Sopranos, everybody loves. You have obviously the Goodfellas trio that everybody loves. Tony Montana and Scarface. I love Vito Corleone just for the simple fact that he genuinely seems like a good guy. Yes, I mean, we just said he cut off a horse's head or whatever. His thing is he will do anything for family, though, and that's what this movie preaches to you, is it's all about family. No matter if they're fuck-ups or whatever, they're your blood, they're your family. Now, as the movie progresses and everything, we slowly see that, and again, another mark with Vito, why I love him so much, they try to push drugs into this gangster world. And he's like, well, no. He's like, you know, we've done fine the way we are. He doesn't want that kind of attention, because the way he sees it is you get people that are addicted to these kind of drugs or whatever, it's going to draw more attention. Like I said, very, very smart, methodical kind of man. Well, that being said, this starts kind of a war between the families and everything. And it's funny because, like I said, at this point, like I said, this is all new territory because I hadn't made it this far. And, you know, in about midway in the film, you think, because they put a head out on Vito and everything, you think, oh my God, man, that sucks. He's dead. But that's the thing about Vito, is he's so strong, like just his will or whatever, that it surprised me, because I was like, man, well, Brando ain't going to be in it the rest of the movie. No, he's fine. Like he's not fine, but he recovers from the injuries and everything. And that's where it transitions into basically Al Pacino's rise as the Godfather, because by the time you get to the end of the first Godfather movie, Vito is dead and Al Pacino takes over. And it's funny because in the second film, now I might get some guff on this one, but the second film I don't think is as good as the first one. A lot of people say that
I like the first one better.
A lot of people, though, a lot of critics and film school students and whatever, film buffs, will say, well, the second one is just as good as the first one. I will agree.
Usually say is that it's a prime example of what to do with a
sequel. And that's what I was going to say, is I will have to say that again, out of all part twos, it's probably the best part two to anything that I could think I've seen. Just because it is, and you didn't get this a lot back in the day, it's a direct sequel. Like, it's a prequel and a sequel.
Right.
And
it's another one of those things like we were talking about even with Hellraiser. It's a companion
piece. It's a companion piece, right. Mm-hmm. And here's the deal. It's like The Godfather Part Two. What's amazing about this is you figure, okay, well, so Michael Corleone, Al Pacino's character, takes over, and you're like, all right, well, you know, surely he's learned enough from his father, and it's almost like he's got his own way of doing it, but as he keeps going, you're like, why? What are you doing? Why? You know, it's just because the great thing about Vito, and the great thing comparing it to Michael, was Vito was never about vengeance. He was about his family. He was always like, oh, I'm going to take care of my family. But he was never, he was always about the business side of it and thinking, okay, if I do this out of vengeance, what's going to happen? This family is going to be jeopardized if I do it. Where Michael pretty much is the opposite. It's like, okay, when you screw him over, you screw somebody in his family, he's coming out and he's going to... He's more the traditional, like, Tony Soprano kind of gangster. Head gangster or whatever. But the second film, I really enjoyed. My one beef with it, and one of the reasons that I would say I don't like as much as the first one, is I really enjoyed the Robert De Niro stuff, the prequel stuff with him as Vito. Thought he did great. But once it gets into the last act, it kind of wanes from that. Like, it's not, you don't get a lot of that. So it's kind of like it just disappears. So it kind of ends weak with that. And then just to finish it, I will say overall, the story arc, it is amazing to see, after all the years and everything, the biggest stamp that Godfather 3 puts on you. One of the saddest endings. One of the saddest endings to a trilogy I've ever seen is you've had Pacino this whole time with his family, and he dies alone on basically like a dirt sidewalk. It just falls out of his chair, and it's like this once powerful man just dies alone. It's like, man, it's really sad. But what I will say with the third one though, I'm not a big, and I know a lot of people that seen it didn't like the third one as much. One is because it's 20 years later. You know, that's part of it. I think if they had done it right after part two, it might have been a little bit better, maybe.
Well, it wasn't. Puzo wrote another book, and that was it. Supposed to. This is in a time where there weren't trilogies and franchises all over the place. The fact they made another one was like, oh, wow.
Right.
So, you know, and of course, it became what it became over the years. And so people were like, well, we'd like to see, you know, the Corleones again. So, you know. Just like whenever, you know, Harrison Ford and George Lynn, Steven Spielberg and everybody, when before that last Indiana Jones came out, they said everywhere we went, every press junket we went to, they said, we're going to do another Indiana Jones. You're going to do another Indiana Jones. Same thing happened with Coppola and company. And they were like, well, you think you'd ever do a Godfather 3? And so they did it. And just like Indiana Jones, it didn't really work out.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just have to let things lie where they may.
But there, you know, there was... overall, Godfather 3 was just not as entertaining as the other two. One of the biggest things for me was, and everybody again says this, is like Francis Ford Coppola decided to cast his daughter as one of Corleone's kids. And, you know, like I said, she's not good at it by far, and that's why you don't see her. You see her behind the camera now instead of in front of the camera. She's obviously just more comfortable directing, but...
She wasn't an actor anyway.
No, but the thing that I, the biggest thing out of Godfather 3, and I don't know if you felt the same way about this, but I was like, what was the point? I didn't get the fact, because one of the interesting things was in part 2, if you buy the DVD box set and you look at part 2, Al Pacino's on the second, on the cover of part 2, but God, I kept looking at it, I said, man, he looks like Andy Garcia. Flash forward to part 3, and James Caan's son is Andy Garcia. But anyways, but I was like, hey, it's Pacino Jr. But Andy Garcia and Sofia Coppola's relationship, I was like, this, I don't get this. I don't understand, why are we going like an incest route with this family thing? Like, to me, it kind of spit on the first two. It was like, all right, you know, family's close, family, it's all about family. And then they did this whole incest thing with them, and I was like, what? And then they had certain characters that you didn't, like they had Bridget Fonda at the beginning of it. And I thought, oh man, she's going to, you know, that's kind of cool. Because it looked like she was going to be with Andy Garcia. And she disappears. Like, she's not even in, like, the three-fourths of the movie. She's in the first half, and that's it. But
yeah, the best thing about that, the third one, is because it really helped Andy Garcia become who he is.
Yeah.
Because he got to be in a Godfather movie and all this.
But it was, you know, and like I said, when you watch all three, nothing, you'll know, especially if you watch them back to back, they all pretty much have the same structure. It starts off at some kind of party, wedding, or whatever the deal is. Then we get the meat of the story in the middle, and then the end is pretty much a montage of the Don and the wars or whatever, and basically the individual hits. So it's like, I was looking forward to that in the third one, but I felt like in the third one, it was like I kind of got out of the party scene. I was like, all right. I was like, man, this could have been a lot shorter movie to me in the third one. But overall, God, I can't deny those people that say, you know, Godfather is one of the best, because I rank it up there. Like I said, the fact that a lot of these movies that are best, like Citizen Kane, everything that was recommended during film school, was like, okay, I got through it, understood it, but really wasn't entertained. But The Godfather entertained me a lot. I thought the second one was really good as well. It entertained me. Like I said, the third one didn't. But now my conscience is clean as far as being a film buff. I've seen The Godfather movies, and I recommend at least anybody who hasn't to watch the first two. And read Wikipedia on the third one. Anyway,
well, you know, it's funny. I would say
watch the third one,
just
but
so you can say you've done them all.
But I think if you're going to revisit them, I don't think you're going to be revisiting that third one much.
No. But if you haven't seen them at all, then
yeah.
Just go ahead and give it a shot. You know what I mean? And then understand why it's not good. Anyway, so. All right, well, that looks like it's going to do it for another episode. I hope everybody had fun. I know we did. It's been a big crazy one. X-Men, Preacher, all this cool stuff like that. So anyway, as always, we appreciate you coming by. And if there's any, if you want to comment, share, like, and subscribe wherever you might be listening this to. And likes and all that good stuff like that. And if you want to get a hold of me or stay in current news of what I might be doing, you can catch me at a couple places, one of which would be ChristopherShoe3 at Facebook.com. Also, you can get me on Twitter at ChristopherShoe at Prime Scorpius, PrimeScorpius. And I've got some, I mentioned last week I was going to do some Let's Plays on YouTube, and I have done that. A little bit of a change is that if you go to YouTube, you can find it, my Let's Play channel, by looking up Prime Scorpius, the same way you spelled it the other way, on Twitter, Prime Scorpius Gaming, Just Talking. I'm sorry, it's not Just Talking, it's Just Playing. Prime Scorpius Gaming, Just Playing. And that's how you're going to find it. The reason I did is because, look, it's just there are like 100,000 Just Playing on there, and I know this. And you know, every time I tried to look up anything and try to find it, I couldn't find it. So I knew that nobody has Prime Scorpius but me. So I changed this thing to Prime Scorpius Gaming Just Playing, and I won that war because when I looked it up, there ain't nothing but my stuff. If you look it up, you'll see my channel. And the three videos that I've got on there thus far. So, if you want to find me, you certainly can find me there. So, that's cool. And obviously, and like I say, also on YouTube, we have the Just Talking Podcast. That's how you would look it up. Where we, I'm still continuing to do this. I did this for last week. It's basically if you just wanted to hear the review. So, this week, obviously, it would be X-Men Apocalypse. So, if you just wanted to hear the review portion of this podcast, and you know, have a little, probably an X-Men graphic that you get to look at whilst doing it, that's where you want to go, is check that out. It's Just Talking Podcast on YouTube. But anyway, that's going to do it for this week. Once again, I'm so glad that you had joined us, and you know, we certainly appreciate it. You really don't understand how much we really do. If you're listening to this, whoever you are out there, we really do appreciate it. So until next time, for me and Ken, we'll see you then. Take it easy. Bye.